New year, new set of podcasts here at Golf Channel. I'm your host, Will Gray. Glad to be joined by Major League pitcher Josh Beckett, who many remember winning the World Series with Boston, but as a South Florida boy, I happen to remember Trader Jack McKeon and the 03 team when you did, by the way, take MVP honors. So great to have you in here playing at the Diamond Resorts Invitational nearby in Orlando. So I appreciate you stopping by. Before we get into it, let's just go through some of your vitals here. Your handicap, what do you got?
I'm a 3 right now.
Okay. Best career round?
68.
How often are you playing? How many times a month?
I haven't been playing a whole lot recently because it's hunting season. So I've been at my ranch a lot. This is kind of my time to be down there. And, then you have the holidays. I've been a little bit busy, occupied. Last couple weeks I've been playing quite a bit, though. I probably played 10 rounds in the last, and I had a couple days then where I played 36, so okay. I probably played 10 rounds in the last couple weeks.
But if we get out to June and July and the days are a little longer, more often than not?
Yeah, I'll be out there probably 4 days a week.
Okay. Now, you mentioned hunting. I know you're a big hunter. Do you see some similarities in terms of the time and the isolation just to have some time to yourself on the golf course versus when you're out hunting?
I do, and I was talking earlier about the I have two different ways. I mean, because I do try to take golf serious, and so I have those days, and then I have days whenever I know I'm playing with my buddies that get out like once or twice a year, and we'll kind of go just twist off, and those are just kind of days where I'm not really worried about score. I'm just kind of just kind of messing around on the golf course, but for the most part, I mean, I take it pretty serious.
So where did this start for you? Were you growing up in high school? Were you a two sport guy, or did you kind of pick up the golf and get the golf bug more in your
No, when, after I left Florida, I was big into fishing. I mean, Brad and I both had bass boats that we keep in Pembroke Pines at a boat storage unit, and we'd pick those up and go to Okeechobee every off day. And then I got traded from the Marlins to the Red Sox, and you got a lot of veteran guys on that team. You got Wakefield, Schilling, and they kind of got me into golf a little bit, and So I picked it up probably when I was like 26 years old, and I've slowly gotten to where like I'm pretty smitten with it.
So you wait until you move up to the Northeast where it's snowing 4 months out of the year, and you miss out on the 100 top shelf golf courses that were within spitting distance when you were with the Marlins.
That was me.
Next time around, you might just want to invert those. It'd be all right. So you start when you're 26, you're a 3 handicap now. When did you feel like, okay, I know what I'm doing?
When I started practicing on short game stuff, it just made everything, I tried to just take left out, and I just tried to hit everything with a cut.
You're a butter cut guy?
Yeah, I mean, I try to keep it as a power cut, but a lot of times it turns into a high cut, but that was whenever I really, when I took one side of the golf course out, my scores just started going down.
Yeah.
I really started practicing on my short game, and I don't feel like my short game is very good right now. But
no one feels like their short game is any good, except for maybe about three guys on tour.
Phil Mickelson.
Phil Mickelson is very confident in his short game. He's got all the world's confidence supply all for that. But the rest of us still have some work to do, for sure. You had mentioned before we started taping here, a life bet with Kevin Millar on the golf course. How did that come about? And where does the match currently stand?
I know I'm up, but I mean it's been.
I only have you here. Millar's not coming on deck.
It's been a pretty tight deal. Like he and I went out and we did the Ace Shootout last year, and we played 188. It might be plus or minus a couple.
Right.
We played 180 something holes, and at the end of the deal, I think he owed me $80. So I mean, it was a very up and down deal, and I think he usually beats me at his golf course, and when I bring him to San Antonio, I usually beat him at Oak Hills or Cordillera.
You feel like so you get him in the windy situations, he can't quite handle him. If you're hitting the high cut down there in San Antonio, that can get you in trouble sometimes.
Oh yeah, well, but I know the golf course pretty well, and I think that's like his golf course is just not. I don't know where to land the ball. He's got some blind tee shots and stuff like that. It's a great golf course, but I just can't. It doesn't matter how many times I play. I don't know where to hit my tee shots.
home field advantage, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's basically what it boils down to. So staying on the San Antonio topic, I know you caddied for your friend Brett Wetterich in the Valero Texas Open this past year. Get you some experience inside the ropes. What's one thing that you saw just from caddying for 36 holes at a PGA Tour event that stuck out to you about, you know, the players, whether it be how they practice, how they play during a round? What was one thing that you sat there and you were like, wow, this is a little different than what I'm used to?
Oh, the practices, I mean, they practice with a purpose. You know, a lot of us, we go hit balls, and we don't know what we're doing. You know, and I'm as guilty as anybody, but I watched a few guys. I watched Billy Horschel and him. He would hit a cut, and then he hit a draw, and then he did a straight one. And he happened to be hitting balls right there. I wasn't, you know, singling anybody out. He just happened to be hitting balls next to us. But I mean, you could tell like he had a, there was a purpose while he was there. And you know, those guys they're very particular about their through lines.
Did you learn that the hard way?
No, okay. I never got yelled at. I caddied twice last year, and I never got yelled at. And I actually did walk in somebody's line, but he was super, super nice about it. And I'm trying to remember his name. I can't remember what his name was. And it was actually when I caddied in Lafayette.
Right.
But, you know, I got warned multiple times about this through line thing. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess they like to make putts so they hit them with plenty of authority. Right. So sometimes they run by and they don't want you standing in their
three feet past where they think they might end up.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned you caddied in Lafayette. So it was at the Chitty Matcha event on the web for mm-hmm. Brett. It's got to be a stark contrast with life on the web versus life on the PGA Tour. What did that look like to you, or what
stuck out? Brett's wife actually. I went everywhere Brett went, and I happened to be his caddy as well, and I did that because he's a buddy of mine. You know, I thought maybe I could help him. You know, we made the cut there. He actually played good the first couple days, and he got super wet, and he played poorly the third day. But you know, we finished up strong, and it's definitely a different world for those guys. I mean, it's you see what the PGA Tour guys get, and then what happens on the web.com. It's a pretty big contrast.
You feel like it's similar to AAA majors?
No, it's probably more like instructional league and majors.
All right.
It's kind of what it seems like to me. Yeah. Those guys, they deserve respect. I mean, they're following their dreams, because the glitz and glamour. There's some TV coverage, but other than that, I mean, you've probably been to these things. Yeah.
It's different. It's totally absolutely. Night and day for sure.
And I don't know how else to put that. Yeah. It's a big contrast.
What's one course on your bucket list?
Augusta National.
All right, move beyond. Augusta National's on everyone's bucket list. Yeah. What would be the 1B on your bucket list?
Oh man, 1B.
You've already played Pine Valley. That's on a lot of bucket lists.
Yeah, I've played that one. I haven't played, but I heard a lot about is Deepdale up in New York.
Okay,
I haven't played it. You know, and I. I just hear things from people about, like, oh, I played Deepdale, and I think I was actually going to play up there one time with the Mets pitching coach, and I think we either got rained out or something, and maybe the pitching rotation got switched. And I didn't go, and I didn't get to play it.
Now, are you, when you're not caddying for Brett, are you a spectator for golf? Do you like to go to golf tournaments, or are you more just watching on TV and playing?
No, the TV coverage is so good now.
Look at this guy. Yeah.
Tell
me more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, I went to the Masters the year I retired. You know, it was kind of my deal. Something I wanted to do, and I think David Faraday and George Strait have a charity event there in San Antonio every year, and Faraday actually donated like a personal trip to the Masters. You know, mm-hmm. We got practice day tickets. We got 2 days of tournament tickets, and we went out there, and I mean, it was awesome. But like, I mean, I there's no way I could do 4 days of watching a golf tournament. You couldn't see anything.
Yeah.
So I mean, like I said, I just feel like the TV coverage is really good, and you guys are doing a great job.
Are you a morning guy or are you an afternoon guy? Do you like the 7 a.m. dew sweeper round, or do you go out for the late twilight round?
Either way, I mean, I like getting up and being the first guy on the golf course. That's a cool thing, you know, for me. I mean, I like I like doing that. But I'll stay out there. I'll go ahead and I'll play my morning. Going. I'll play my morning round, and then I'll eat lunch, and then I'll play an afternoon round as well.
There you go. That's getting the best of both worlds. You played much in Europe, Scotland, Ireland, any of those places?
No, I've been to Italy. I played one time over there. I cannot remember the name of the golf course, but it was nice. I mean, I really haven't traveled a whole lot until the last couple of years. I've been in New Zealand, Italy, and Bermuda. And Bermuda was for a little golf tournament.
Mm-hmm. So when you're with the Red Sox and you're starting to work that handicap down towards single digits, what's your usual game? Who are you playing with besides Millar that you're trading $2 with each way?
I play a lot with Tom Byram and Cameron Beckman right now.
Okay. When you were with the Red Sox.
Oh, when I was Millar didn't play. Okay. It was me, Wakefield, Schilling, and then later on Lester joined up, okay, and then Buchholz, and we had it was pretty much play $100 for the front, $100 for the back, and then the loser of the total has to buy the other guy's shirt in the pro shop. The only rule was it didn't matter how much the shirt cost; it had to have the logo on it.
That's a good rule. I like that.
So and then the deal was then you
wore the winner. Does the winner pick the shirt?
No. Okay. If you're getting the shirt, you go pick the shirt. Okay. It doesn't matter how much it costs.
Right.
And then you wear it to the field that day. It's basically like it's a badge of honor. Like
there
that.
You go. So was the rest
John
of the team,
Lester's ass again today.
Were the rest of the team kind of aware that they're looking, all right, this guy's coming in with the golf shirt?
Oh, they knew, yeah. Okay. I mean, because when you come in with because those new shirts have like the iron pleats, but they're in folded spots.
Yep.
So yeah, they knew.
They knew.
Looks like Josh won today, or looks like Buchholz won today.
There you go. I like that though. I need to maybe incorporate that. The winner gets the shirt off the loser. All right. If I make you PGA Tour commissioner for a day, what are you doing? What's your first thing?
You know what? I got to say this. I would expand the field.
Really?
Get more guys in.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it's just me being biased because some of my buddies are kind of, on the outskirts.
Cusp,
yeah. So I think that would be my one thing, just because I do that for my buddies.
Right. Okay. Are you a fast pace of play guy?
Oh, everything I do, I'm in a hurry. Cameron laughs at me all the time. He goes, "What are you in such a hurry for?" I said, "I don't know. I don't got nowhere to go, but my motor moves fast."
All right. Does it bother you to play with a slow guy? I mean, we're seeing now headlines with Spieth and Day talking about, Day especially, that he's like, "I'm going to just keep playing slow. I feel like I play better when I play slow." So as a fast player, does that affect your game when you're with a slower guy?
I don't really think I'm good enough to let
three handicap. You're pretty good.
To let that even enter it though. I think. I don't know. Like I said, I wouldn't tell those guys anything to do. I know that they each have their own pace, but it seems like to me most of them want to play slow.
Right.
I don't really feel like very many of them want to just get up and hit their ball. There's a very, they think things through pretty thoroughly.
Did pace ever come up when you're pitching? Did you ever have a pitching coach that was telling you speed up, slow down?
No, I had position players that would tell me to speed up. The only time I got slow was when I had runners on base, and that was because I wasn't super fast to home plate, so I would hold the ball and hoping that he wouldn't be able to time me. I would change my times up. But, yeah, my position players, they would be like, "Hey, man, just speed up a little bit. We're getting a little flat-footed out here." Mikey Lowell was the best about it. He would just come and tell me. He'd be like, "Hey, man, just speed it up a little bit."
So you're getting more from the infield guys than you are necessarily.
Well, the outfield guys, I'm sure.
Then the coaches.
The coaches. I never had a coach ever tell me, speed up or slow down. Perry Hill was the guy that told me to hold the ball for longer periods of time and then shorter periods and then kind of mix it up to hold the base runners.
How do you compare the two World Series rings?
The
experience. I got to think it's like picking your favorite child, right?
Yeah.
The hesitation makes me think otherwise. You might have a favorite.
I don't have a favorite. I mean, Boston is. We were like from day one. I mean, it was just front like I think we were in first place from day one, all the way through the season. I mean, it was just we never even looked back. The Marlins team was kind of, we kind of had this. It was cool because we all kind of came up together.
Yeah.
And we all sucked really, really bad. I mean, you probably remember.
I remember those teams, yeah.
We all sucked. I mean, a lot of us never even went to AAA.
Yeah.
Myself, Brad Penny, AJ Burnett. We came straight from Double A, so we literally had to learn how to. We took our beatings in the big leagues, and you know we really learned how to. We learned how to lose, and then we learned how to win, and then all of a sudden it's like 2003, and we fire our manager, and we get Jack McKeon, who's, I mean, I don't know, he's 200 years old at that time. You know,
give or take, but yeah, that's
we show up to the ballpark. We have no idea what's going on.
Yeah,
this was really before like all the internet stuff had taken off too. So we're we show up and it's like our pitching coach is fired, our strength coach left because he was Jeff Torborg's son. Our manager, we got Jack McKeon walking around in there.
Surprise!
Yeah, well, it's just like okay. I mean, and we the front office they lit a fire. If that's what they were trying to do, they did it. You know. Yeah. And we went from that point on, I think we played like, I don't know, we were 40 games over 500 or something. I mean, we killed everybody, you know, pretty much from that point on. And, you know, I don't think it was anybody's fault, Jeff Torborg or Brad Arnsberg. I mean, I thought they were doing a great job. And, you know, just maybe we just needed something different. So it ended up working out. And that was just a cool one because we were young and sucked. And then we were young and good. And it was, you know, we're – got guys wearing fedoras on the plane. I mean, it was a different.
They're different, like you said. It's like you got two kids.
I couldn't pick one.
Yeah.
I mean, Boston is an unbelievable place to win.
Yeah.
I mean, you win there and it's your God.
All right, last one before we let you go. Besides the guys that you have life bets with, so take Millar out of this. Who's one person that you want to beat at Diamond Resorts?
I want to beat John Lester, which I think I'm going to do.
Okay.
I feel like Millar is going to give me a little more competition. Those are my two, like, real competitive guys that, I mean, we're competitive beyond. I mean, it like, hurts your feelings when you lose those two guys.
Oh, trust me, everyone's got that circle where you take the dollars out of it.
Millar beats me, like, I'd rather somebody else give him the money. It can be my money, but somebody else
third
give
party.
It to you. Yeah, It's not good.
All right, so Millar and Lester, those are the two to keep an eye on. Well, Josh Beckett, World Series MVP, thank you very much for joining us on this Golf Channel podcast. I'm Will Gray. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.